Hey, good morning, everyone. We're doing, we're trading fist bumps here in the studio. That's kind of the tradition we have on Voices of Montana. Good morning, everyone. This is Steve Arviscow. I'm your guest host today. Hey, it's summer's here. School is out for summer. I feel like, well, you don't want me singing that song. It wouldn't sound well, and maybe it's not an appropriate song. I don't know your perspective on that, but definitely school's out. If it's not out already, it'll be out tomorrow. Graduations have already taken place at the high school level. You've got kids and maybe grandkids running around at your feet, and they're in your refrigerator constantly. Summer camp planning and summer travel plans. You got all that stuff going on. But before the fun starts, it's time to pull out the report card because we want to know how we're doing. Was it a straight A year, or was it, we've got some things we need to work on? Well, today we're going to talk about the report card from two of Montana's school districts. Joining me for a reflection on the school year are two Montana school superintendents, Erwin Garcia and Michael Hill, today on Voices of Montana. Cody, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Were you a straight A student?
No.
Yeah, me neither. But I did receive numerous perfect attendance awards. And I'm kind of, still kind of proud, because I think showing up matters, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they still do perfect attendance recognition. It makes sense that they would. Well, we're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about some other things. I've brought in two great school superintendents from school districts in Montana. Micah Hill, who is the Missoula County Public Schools superintendent, and Dr. Erwin Garcia with Billings Public Schools. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me this morning on Voices of Montana.
Good morning.
Well, thanks for having us.
Excellent. Thank you guys for, this is a, I know, really, really busy time. The school year is kind of like 99% done, but that last percent is probably 110 miles an hour, a lot of stuff to finish. You've had graduation kind of in the books for your high school students, I think, mostly. Kids are off to summer. Teachers are about ready to take this really big, deep breath. What's that end of the school year like for a school superintendent? Erwin?
Well, good morning, everyone. So the end of the school year looks more like getting ready for the next.
Okay.
Wrapping up, number one, the budget, making sure that we have proper faculty hire, transitions of principals, teachers, making sure that you have all of your positions ready for the next school year. You have to plan for summer professional development. You still have something that we call ESY, which is extended school year for special needs kids. You have your Jumpstart program for kids that need interventions during the summertime. So it never ends. It never stops. We're always moving.
Always getting ready for what is coming next. So never, there's no real summer break for school superintendents. You're on the job as the chief executive for your school district. Micah, what is your end of the year, end of the school year look like?
Yeah, it's real similar to what Erwin described, only we haven't had graduation yet. So we're lagging about a week behind. We have graduation next week. And so we're getting ready for that. But kind of like Erwin talked about, you think that there's going to be these lulls where you're going to find some time to do this or that and dive into some deeper topics. But it's just a go situation when you're planning for like Jumpstart. You know, that's a great example that Erwin brought up. I mean, we're planning for roughly 300 students who will be participating in that over the summer and getting the staff hired just for that. And then you have just your another component to what starts to happen at the end of the school year is you plan for all of your building and facility needs. Our buildings are occupied most of the time during the school year, so you have a really short window to do any kind of construction yep. projects without causing interruption to the schools.
Micah, for our listeners across Montana, I'll have Erwin do this as well. We'll start with you, Micah. Describe your school district, Missoula County Public Schools.
Yeah, so we're a school district of 9 elementary schools, 3 middle schools, three comprehensive high schools, but we also have Sealy High School in the Swan Valley. And then we also have Willard Alternative High School, and we have a Connect Online Charter School and another elementary charter school that we refer to as Teach. So we're a district of about 9,000 kids. Our free and reduced rate is about 45%. Our special education population combined with our students who are on 504s is in excess of 25% of our population. So we're pretty diverse. We're second largest district in Montana, right behind Irwin, but Irwin outpaces us by quite a bit.
Irwin, a little bit for our listeners, describe Billings Public Schools.
Yeah, a district of 16,500 students, 21 elementary, 6 middle schools, 3 high schools, comprehensive high schools, career center,
yep.
3 charter schools, early college high school, opportunity school, multilingual academy. We also have about, with 504s and special education, about 20% of our population, about 53% in poverty. very diverse. I think we have one of the largest indigenous populations within our community, yeah. About 10% of our population, and mixed race combined actually is about 20%. So mixed race indigenous students within our community. So pretty diverse.
That's important background just to get perspective. And then across Montana, there are very rural, small school districts. Some of the issues are a little different, but the fundamentals are probably the same, delivering a quality education for every student that walks in that front door and then putting all the resources and people and skills behind that effort. I'm curious, how did you become school superintendents? Irwin, talk a little bit about your journey in education, how you came in your role here in Billings Public Schools, and then Micah, we'll ask you that same question.
Started as a teacher. I was a teacher for 6 years, became an assistant principal. In those two scenarios, principal and assistant principal, combined about 5 years, actually a very short tenure. Both schools, actually Sanchez Elementary and Deanda, not only became some of the top schools in the district, but became recognized by an organization called Children at Risk. And my schools were recognized at the state level. I apologize for that. And also recognized at a national level. Both schools receive some of the best urban distinctions across the nation. That's why my tenure was short. I thought I was going to be a career principal.
Right.
And then I got pulled off the principalship to lead other principals.
Okay.
So I did that for about 5 years more. And I was a principal supervisor for about 5 years. Then I was asked to become an area superintendent. I reported to the superintendent in Houston. Houston is a massive district, 280 schools. Back then it was 205,000 students. And I had an area. So 56 campuses. I did that for 2 years before I apply to Billings, Montana, became superintendent in Billings, and this is the end of my third year.
Well, and you've done a fantastic job. I'm here local, so I can kind of see the work that you've done, your leadership and vision, and encouraging the trustees to think about what the future looks like and how you can go in a common direction. You've been very skilled at doing that. Micah, give us a little bit of your background, your journey to become the superintendent of Missoula County Public Schools.
Yeah, so similar to Irwin, started as a teacher, taught for 5 years. During that first 5 years, I worked on my administrative credentials because as a young teacher, the only way to get more money was to get another degree. So I did that and then was selected as a activity director and dean of students and then became a middle school principal. And then a high school assistant principal, and then a high school principal, all in Kalispell, Montana, and then was put in for the superintendent job in March of 2020, so right before COVID happened, was hired, and then got to have my first taste of being a superintendent and arguably one of the most challenging times in public education. Yep. Through the pandemic. And was there for 3 years, and all my kids live here in Missoula, and a position opened up here. Dr. Rob Watson left the position, and my kids said, you know, Dad, maybe you should think about coming to Missoula. And so I applied and was selected, and I've been here for the last 3 years.
Well, thank you, Micah, for that background and for your service as well, an educator for your entire career. So I have a little bit of a dated perspective on the end of the school year. I just have this, students run home with their report card. They show their parents. Once they get through either an exciting conversation or a difficult conversation, the fun begins. And then it's Saturday every day, and I'm eating lots of cereal, and you have adventures and camps and all these things that you're doing as a student that's been let free to enjoy the summer. But I bet the experience is different today. And I bet there are dynamics at play that make that experience different. So talk about students today. They're on summer break. That experience is not the idealized, that kind of idyllic kind of experience that I described, just a Saturday every day. It's going to look different for each student, but it has modern culture that it runs into. What does that summer experience look like for most of our students?
Interesting question. So let me give you just a piece of data. If you go to the west end of our district, Boulder, Arrowhead type of elementary school, mostly middle class families. On the first week of school, kindergarten, using a norm reference assessment, meaning a national assessment to measure proficiency, 80% of those kids on the first week of kindergarten, meaning no limited teacher input,
right. Yep.
80% of those kids are proficient. On the same week, on the same test, you'd go to Ponderosa Orchard, and now 20% of the kids are proficient. So what the teachers have to face when we're dealing with poverty, and what the families have to face when they're dealing with poverty, are two different scenarios. In one hand, you get the 80% proficiency, the Arrowheads, the Boulders. Of course, when they rate it, schools, they're all 9 out of 10 great schools. But when you go to Orchard, Ponderosa, Riverside, Medicine Crow, and that poverty kicks in and only 20% of the kids are proficient, those systems rate those schools as, oh, well, this is a 2 out of 10 type of school, a bad school, a good school. Well, it's not really that simple. So I mentioned this data point because what happens is what's life or the worldview through the life of a student in Billings, Montana, it really depends, right? If you are provided with all of the resources, the means, and the books at home, and you get warm meals, and when it's cold, you have heating, and you have a nice bed for you, and you have a nice room, and you have both your parents, well, that's life through that lens. And summer means Idaho. Summer means Washington. Summer means yeah. Europe, you know, cruises. Well, in poverty, summer doesn't look the same. So summer looks like I don't have a bed for myself. I have to sleep on the floor because my older brother is the one taking the bed tonight. My parents are abusing each other. There's alcohol involved. There's drug addiction. Or my mom is incarcerated. My dad is out of the picture. My grandma is raising me. I don't have food, stability. I don't get any books at home. And now, of course, I go to the first week of school and my proficiency levels are low. So my summer is different. It's survival mode. And for many of these families, there's no food on the table. So that's why we have to think about how we're going to provide those meals. And people say, well, parents should be taking care of the kids during the summer, but where are the parents? And that's the concern. So to answer your question, the report card that you kind of implied at the beginning, it's very positive for Billings Public Schools. Like I have based on the norm reference assessments, only 49% of the kids in Billings, K through 8, this is 3 years ago, only 49% of the kids were proficient in math. We're sitting today, because that data we got yesterday from the national assessments, K through 8, 11,000, 12,000 students, we're sitting at 69% proficiency. it's a 20% turnaround. For reading, we used to be 51%. We're sitting at 65%. So that's about 14% from where we were 3 years ago to where we are now. And then, of course, AP. All of that data is available to the public. We've made tremendous gains in AP, ACT, career opportunities, career certifications. All of those data points are there for the public to see. And those show that we are trending in a very positive way. So the report card looks great when it comes to numbers, but in the life of a child, that is a total different experience.
And you might, what you've described earlier, before the achievement, the marks on a corporate, on an aggregate level, there's those individual students. The way you describe that, Aaron, part of me is like, no, not in Montana, but it's yes in Montana.
Yeah.
Micah, what's your experience? What are students experiencing in your school district when that summer break happens? And are those experiences so different? It just depends on the student and the environment. Give us a sense of that experience.
Yeah, I think even for Missoula, obviously Billings is a much larger urban center than Missoula, but we experience those exact same things. You have sometimes what I refer to as the haves and the have-nots. And you see those different experiences just in the way that you can even look at like summer camps. There are summer camps. They're obviously open for everyone that are available to them. But kids aren't necessarily leaving the city for summer camps or in poverty. So you have those kind of things. And we're in a unique situation for large urban towns. I mean, we have a university, a large university system here in Missoula. And so that kind of brings the average up relative to other communities that don't have that. And so I think you see some of those disparities as well. I think the thing that, Irwin described as being challenging is also part of the positive in the sense that we have an opportunity to impact and affect, outcomes for those kids by offering early intervention, by offering, opportunities throughout the school years. I refer and talk to a lot about how schools have had to become everything to everyone. When we were in school, going back, right, at some point, no lunches were provided to school kids. Now we provide lunch and breakfast, and we do it in the summertime.
Right.
We provide health services. We provide mental health services. We provide social workers. We have community liaisons who go out and secure funds to make sure that kids have gloves in the wintertime, coats, sunscreen, hygiene products. I mean, all the things. We have become that to our communities. And it's an expectation, and it's an obligation that we feel we have, because no matter what, any kid who comes to our door and says, I want to be in school, we take that kid. No matter the circumstances, no matter the socioeconomics, no matter what the differences are, we have a responsibility to do that.
You meet them where they're at and help them grow as a result of that engagement and that experience with you. Well, welcome back to Voices of Montana. I'm Steve Arviscow, your guest host today. And my guests, Micah Hill, Missoula County Public Schools Superintendent, and Irwin Garcia, Superintendent, Billings Public Schools. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me today at a very busy time of year. And I would guess they're always busy in your role as a superintendent. I do want to ask you how you measure success. And it's a two-part question. The first one is, what are those normal kind of academic classroom outcome measurements or school-level criteria measurements, or maybe there's some measurements that on a district-wide basis. So that's part one. Or what are those things that we're measuring? Second one is, how do you, as the CEO, leader, measure success based upon mission, vision, and values of the district? So Irwin, we'll start with you.
Yeah. So absolutely, student achievement, student growth, graduation rates, dropout rates, those are the ones that I'm tracking, and I feel very satisfied with the direction that we've taken. We're not there yet. Let me give you just an example.
Yes.
just last year, we had 50% of our Native American kids graduated high school. We were lower than the state.
Last year.
So I'm before that, it was about 50%, 56%. Okay. It was in the 50s. We're sitting now at 76%. So for me, that's absolutely critical. Dropout, we had about 300 kids every year that we lose. That number has been cut in half. So we only have about 150 kids dropping from school. It's not perfect. It's not where we need to be, but it is progress. So those are kind of the matrix that I use to track success. Now, there's another side of, you know, of the equation, vision, mission, and you mentioned strategic priorities. And this is the one that is really hard to quantify. But if for me as a superintendent, it's critical. For instance, bullying is an issue. It's something that I have to always keep track. It is hard to quantify. Unfortunately, mental health issues related, specifically related to suicide ideation and actual acts of suicide, difficult topics that probably requires us more time to discuss. And I also measure my effectiveness on those. And I can tell you, we're not doing well. And it's not only because of the district, it's really a community issue.
Absolutely. Micah, how about you measuring success for your district at the classroom student level, but then as it relates to your mission, vision, values?
Yep. So like Erwin talked about, obviously academic achievement data, the test scores, the graduation rates, college and career readiness, all of those things we're tracking. Those are the things that get reported publicly. But I'd also say that test scores miss a lot. When we start talking averages, I don't know how you average a student who's, let's just say, in the seventh grade and reads at the third grade level and have another seventh grade student who reads at the 10th grade level. You can't combine those two and say our kids are reading at an average, because a kid who reads at third grade and seventh grade is a problem, and we have to address that. Yeah. We have to get those skills up. We have to do those things. Erwin talked about, you know, Native American students. We have to look at those achievement gaps and those trends that are happening. When we look at marginalized students, marginalized populations, those are things that we have to take a look at. Special education, kids with 504 plans, you know, all of those things become part of that. I think you can also look at things like attendance and chronic absenteeism. Those are always issues that have faced schools for time immemorial. But there's some other indicators in there too, especially when it relates to students, and that we get into those kind of well-being and engagement indicators. You know, what's the health of our kids as a whole, and what are the things that we can do to address that? How do we address bullying? How do we address suicide? How do we address those tough mental health topics that we're constantly faced with, even student behaviors? So those things. From an organizational standpoint, when I'm looking at success as a superintendent, I'm looking at things like organizational health, like what's our staff retention, what's our teacher turnover, are people happy in the profession? Do we have a culture where people want to be at Missoula County Public Schools? What's our hiring quality? How are we getting and attracting and retaining teachers? I talk about this publicly in our community. When a teacher in Montana can at a starting wage of $40,000 can drive to Washington, can get to Spokane in 3 hours and make $30,000 more starting wages.
Well, Tom is taking another break. This is Steve Arviscal, your guest host. And I said that with a snarky kind of tone, didn't I? I didn't mean that for Tom. Tom's doing great. He's doing some chores and going to take some family time, which he absolutely deserves. I am honored to have Erwin Garcia here, superintendent of schools in Billings, the Billings Public Schools, and then Micah Hill, Missoula County Public Schools superintendent. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us, and thank you for this opportunity to kind of reflect back on the school year. In a moment, I'm going to push us to thinking forward, but I still want to have a conversation, Micah, and let you kind of wrap up. School's all about measuring achievement and success. A student starts here, and then by the end of the school year, you want to see growth and proficiency, and you want to see the light bulb turn on and how that teacher engages with the students. And at the end of the school year, you can go, wow, Johnny started here. Look where he ended. I feel really good. You have that success measurement, And then, Mikey, you were talking about organizationally. You can't impact the lives of the students effectively without the organization working well. Mikey, how do you measure the success of the organization that you're running?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of different ways. And, you know, I talked a little bit about, you know, staff and retention and hiring quality. You know, there used to be a time when we would post teaching positions and we'd get 50, 60 candidates. And then over a period of time, we would start to see maybe five or six. So those kind of things. But then if you can see, like for us, if we have 25 applicants for an open elementary teaching job, we're feeling better about those kind of things. So that helps. But some of the other things that from an organization standpoint, you know, we have to look at community and board relations. You know, we assess, and I know Irwin does this too, but we have qualitative surveys that we put out where we are talking to our parents, our staff, and our students about how they're feeling about things. And how we can be responsive to some of those community concerns. So when we talk about those things, we're looking for, you know, do I feel safe at school? Is there a trusted adult? Yep. Are there some other measures that we're looking at? So things that get more into the climate and culture of your organization.
Quickly, what are you most proud of looking back at this school year, Irwin?
For me, this is beyond the metrics that is used district-wide or the implicit metrics for me is making an impact in the most vulnerable child. Mm. When I see graduation rates for Native American kids increasing and graduation rates for special needs kids increasing, or the students in poverty in the areas where I know have been hit by poverty, to see them increasing proficiency levels and growth measures, that is what brings satisfaction to me. That's what keeps me motivated to do this work, despite the challenges. You know, one of those is levies not passing.
Yeah,
right?
We're going to talk about that.
Levies not passing and other issues. But really, that's what keeps me, that's my north, is knowing that I'm making decisions with my team that ultimately impact teachers in a positive way so they can make an impact in the lives of a child, that especially a child that needs it the most.
Yeah, I appreciate your passion and the heart that you put behind that. Mike, how about for you? The accomplishment, you can look back at this school year and say, I am so proud of that.
Yeah, I would say for us this year, and it's always a journey. It's never a single snapshot of any one thing. But our transformational learning initiatives that we've been putting out for our staff, really challenging the idea that the only education or the best education comes from within the four walls of a classroom, that we need to build out experiences for our kids and our staff to have opportunities to explore and learn and look at things through a competency-based lens instead of a average score lens. And so we've done some really great work around that.
Talk about the partnerships that it takes. You have the teacher in the classroom. You have it starts with the parents, how they're preparing that child before the child even shows up in the classroom, and the teacher in the classroom and the infrastructure and resources that support the teacher, and then the broader community. A successful school district, I think, has really powerful partnerships. Would you agree?
I absolutely do agree with that.
Yeah.
We have tremendous partnerships. You know, when we created our graduate profile, for instance, or when we developed our strategic priorities for the next 5 years, all of that was done with community input. And it, you know, legislators, city council members, entrepreneurs, attorneys, physicians, parents, people from the streets that have a passion for education, principals, teachers, and getting the students actually involved in that process was actually very beneficial. So getting the community to own their district, because at the end of the day, all of these properties that we own and the system in general is owned by the taxpayers.
Yeah.
This is an investment, billions of dollars invested throughout three years. I mean, grandparents, parents, and now we're here. It's a collective investment in public education. It's a system that belongs to all. So everyone should be involved. And we have a lot of participation, a lot of engagement, but there is also a lack of engagement. So you see, you have people that are passionate and engaged, but you have a lot of people that, and I understand, I mean, you have jobs, you sometimes have three jobs.
Absolutely.
You're unemployed, or you're dealing with your own issues and situations and financial struggles. So you might not be as engaged, but it is really on our part to try to engage you or to at least communicate that or provide you with that opportunity. But sometimes it's not there. And that is also a challenge.
And you don't, and there's some, and I'm one now, I, you know, our kids are grown. I'm a taxpayer in your school district, Irwin, and I don't have kids in the school. How do you keep me engaged? Micah, Irwin, address this. How do you keep those that don't have students in the system but contribute financially to the success of your district, how do you keep them engaged? Micah?
Yeah, I think that engagement comes through just a variety of channels. And, you know, we talk about our, you know, partnerships, and we have great partnerships with the University of Montana. We have great partnerships with our business community as we seek to expand work-based learning opportunities and internships and externships. And so it's pieces of communication, and it's not just communication one way. It has to be communication both ways. When people raise concerns and they have issues or they don't understand what that looks like. And I would guess that Irwin, similar to me, we spend a lot of time out in our community talking with our civic groups, with Kiwanis and Rotary and other organizations. But we also do things where we bring community into our school. So we have like a program that's called ROW, Reading Opens Worlds, and we bring in grandparents and anybody who wants to come in and mentor a child and work with them on developing reading skills. And it's the most basic, simple thing. It costs $0. But what we also try and do in that is we try and show and demonstrate what amazing things are happening in our schools and in the future kids that we're putting out there in our communities. They're going to be our doctors, our lawyers, our police officers, our teachers. Those kinds of things excite our community. And when they understand that strong schools also mean a strong community, they're able to engage in that and see success from that.
Micah, that's very well said. Irwin, I know you do Educator for a Day, other things to engage folks. You want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, we have all those. We have programs like that. I see it as an ex officio member of some of the critical boards in our community, the Chamber of Commerce, also the Big Sky Economic Development. I'm part of the Yellowstone Coalition for Mental Health. I attend Hope Coalition. And, you know, I try to be engaged and involved, bringing partnerships, just like Micah described, companies, organizations, attorneys, and firms, and getting kids to have experiences. It's been very, very successful having that those partnerships with community members. And the engagement is not only for the people that usually is your supporter, also for people that might not be your supporter. You know, sometimes I attend the Yellowstone Republican Party women's group, or sometimes I attend the Democratic Party group. And, you know, in situations, you know, trying to not be political, but you have to be out there. I have to be out there. Establishing those relationships with people that support you, people that don't support you. At the end of the day, it is our responsibility to be out in the community.
Well, Voices of Montana goes by so quick. We've been having a great conversation about school districts, about education, about students, about, hey, summer's here. What just happened in the schools? And then what might be happening in the future? We're talking with Irwin Garcia and Michael Hill. I posed the question before the break, what happens when voters say no to a levy, when you as superintendents know the need is there, but you just got told no? How do you respond to that? Irwin, you had a recent vote. Let's start with you.
Well, number one, I have to recognize that there's two pieces to this puzzle. Number one, I have an obligation to continue providing best quality services for our students. About 90% of our total budget is spent in salaries. So we have about 10% for all of the things to run the district, you know, the typical expenses, power and water and all the things. So my obligation is I want to enhance the opportunity for students, interventions, acceleration, after school programming, experiences, just like Mike, I was talking about, not only the academic, but the experiences. To do that, you need resources. So understanding that the voters ultimately are your boss, my boss, right? So we put it on their plate. We say, look, this is your investment. This is your district.
That's right.
We have these needs and we have capacity within our budget. It is for you to decide. And when voters decide, we have to be respectful of those decisions. Some voters can't afford to have a bill increase on their tax bill. Others can, and that's why you get people to vote and support. So what do we do? Well, we'll just have to live within what we have. I mean, you can't expect innovation. You can't expect for us to say, well, we're going to go to these poverty schools and provide even more interventions. Well, we can't afford those interventions. Yeah. People won't see that, because one thing that I am not going to do is, okay, we're just going to have to close athletics, or we're going to shut down music, or we're going to shut down art. In some instances, those are the decisions that we're forced to make when levies continue to fall. It's at any given time, you're going to have to cut something. It's going to be painful. Right now, at least in Billings, we're not in that situation.
Micah, how about you? For 30 seconds, how do you respond when a mill levy doesn't turn out your way?
Yeah, I mean, you just go back to the drawing board and you try and figure out what else do I cut? And usually when you're talking salary and benefits is 90% of your budget, that's what you're cutting. You still have to operate the bus. You still have to operate the building. That other 10% are the things that you need to stay open and do business. And what that means is you're just cutting programs. You're looking at, you know, well, we have AP, we have IB, you know, all these great things that we're trying to do that our community wants and expects from us. And then when they don't support that budget to be at 100%, that creates a painful dichotomy for us.
That's what you're hired to do as the CEO of the school district, is you make that work. I want to give each of you 30 seconds to just share your final thoughts, words of encouragement. Erwin, we'll start with you.
Well, thank you. I want to thank the community, and number one, Steve, Cody, for the opportunity. Wanted to tell the community about the Daly Stadium project. We have raised $7 million.
Outstanding.
And we have 6.2. We're almost, I think, $1.2 million short. I want to challenge any listener or business owner or someone who would like to donate for the Daly's project. We still have some naming opportunities. One is the Skyview Locker Room. We have the East Stands. So if you have in your heart to donate for this project, just know that we are still receiving donations for the Daly's. Want to present that project on schedule and lower price than projected by August 29th.
Okay, we're going to look forward to seeing that. Micah, final thoughts, about 30 seconds.
Yeah, I you know, feel fortunate. I love my job. I love the fact that I get a chance to have an impact on our students and our community, and I'm grateful for our community here in Missoula that supports our levies and continues to have trust in us. And know that we don't always get everything perfect, but it doesn't mean that we aren't trying. And
gentlemen, thank you for the work that you do. Erwin, I get to see your work on a daily basis. Mike, I haven't ventured over in Missoula in a while, but I know both of you are putting all of your skills, experience, passion, your heart, and care for the kids each day in the work that you do. And I want to thank you for educating Montana's future.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.